Welcome. Tonight I'm going to be speaking about faith and confidence on the spiritual path. Before that, I just want to share with you a reflection. I think I had this just today while being here in Albuquerque. Most of you probably already know this, but sometimes when we're within a group, we lose sight of the bigger picture of what's going on. And each time I come to Albuquerque, it's just so delightful to hang out with your sangha. It really is a sweet sangha. And if you don't know that already, it's the truth. So there we go. So once again, thank you for having me. It really is a delight to be here together with all of you. Yes, so faith and confidence on the spiritual path. If you haven't already noticed this yet on the spiritual path, I'm sure you'll come across it at some point, which is that part of this spiritual path, part of any spiritual path, is wrestling with doubt. Doubt arises. Doubt arises about, in particular, about the path that we're on. And faith and confidence are such key components in terms of navigating the doubt that's inevitably going to arise at some point. It might arise often, it might arise seldom, but it is going to arise. And so I want to talk about these qualities. Really, it's the same quality. The Pali word for faith is sadha, which is also a lot of times translated as confidence. So faith and confidence. And I want to point out, it was even the case for the Buddha. Many of you might know, on the evening of his enlightenment, what he was struggling with before waking up was doubt, coming in the form of mara. This is a really common experience and something that we need to learn how to navigate. And I also feel like faith and confidence are so pertinent for a spiritual path, especially in these modern times, especially in what I would call mainstream culture. And that's namely because, have you noticed how many choices that we're faced with, really day after day? When you think about it, when you walk into a grocery store, how many choices that you have? I mean, it's unbelievable about any product that's in there, around clothing, around technology, cell phones, computers, around cars, even for many of us, a wide variety of choices in terms of career. And not only that, there's a prevalent idea that if we have more choices equals freedom, equals more freedom. Right? We get that underlying message in mainstream culture. But you might be able to relate to this. When they've done studies about this, and some of you might be familiar with this, is that when you give a person more choices, they are less likely to choose. And when they do choose, they choose more unskillfully. And not only that, when someone's given more choices and they choose, regardless of the choice they make, they end up more disappointed with their choice. Drag, huh? So I guess that prevalent idea of it being connected with freedom really might not be so true. And so what I want to point out about this world of choice that you live in is that it can easily lead to paralysis, to a way of actually not authentically moving forward in any kind of way. And it's not only in our grocery stores or in the clothing stores that we have so many choices, but if you noticed how many choices there are in the spiritual marketplace, it's unbelievable, especially now. Just in one tradition, there can be so many ways of meditating. And just in Buddhism, there's so many different forms of Buddhism. What to choose? And I think that can be a real danger, which also can be addressed with faith and confidence. When we get lost in that, there can be a paralysis where we end up merely reading about a spiritual path, merely contemplating it, and not actively engaging it. How do we really truly commit to a spiritual path so that it really deepens? And what I want to point out about faith, what I want to explain tonight, is it's that quality that allows you to move forward. So what I want to come back to again and again is that faith is the confidence to commit. There's a commentary to the early discourses of the Buddha called the Visuddhimagga, which is translated as the path of purification. And in the Visuddhimagga, a lot of these terms are defined, and they have a system of defining. And I want to share with you some of the definitions that come under faith, because I think it will really help with our exploration tonight. So the Visuddhimagga says that the function of faith is to clarify. And the metaphor that they give is that it's like a water-clarifying gem. So supposedly, in their folklore, there was this idea that there was this gem that you could place into water and it would clear up the water so that then you could clearly see. And also its function is to enter into, which really fits into this quality of committing that I'm talking about. And again, the image that's used for that is that it's like the setting out across a flood. So not only entering into, but entering into difficulty in a way that we move through it. And the manifestation of faith is resolution. In order to have the confidence to commit to something, we need to have the clarity. You need to be clear about the choices that you're making, really on a moment-to-moment basis, on how you're living your life. Because this is what we're talking about in terms of the spiritual path, right? It's not just something that we want to engage in superficially, but what would it be like to make it a way of living? So the clarity to choose, especially in the midst of all these choices. One of the reasons I wanted to speak about this tonight is that I've found again and again, what I always come back to in my spiritual practice is I find myself coming back to this quality of faith and confidence again and again. Because I notice what's needed for my practice to continue to deepen is this quality of recommitting to this practice again and again and again, so that it can continue to unfold. So that in some ways, what I'm doing is I'm giving myself over to this path. And the Buddha was really clear about the importance of this. For example, there's a list of these five spiritual faculties which are so important for the unfolding of this path. And the first quality is faith, is confidence. Or in another discourse called the Upanishad Sutta, what he's doing is he's explaining the conditions needed for the mind to awaken. And in that discourse as well, the first quality is faith, it's confidence. Tonight I want to give you a couple illustrations of faith as a way of looking at it more deeply. The first illustration I want to give to you is it's about a man by the name of Vedran Smailovic. And it takes place actually in Sarajevo. Many of you might remember in the early 90s in Sarajevo, there was a siege of Sarajevo. So the Serbian forces had actually surrounded Sarajevo. And the residents, most of the residents of Sarajevo, were trapped within the city. And it was a rather horrible situation to be in. Because what the Serbian forces were doing is usually, and this was going on literally for years, that there would be daily shelling of the city, of the residents. And not only shelling, but there was sniper fire. So it was always quite difficult even to traverse the streets of Sarajevo, because you never knew when there was a sniper there or there was going to be sniper fire. And not only that, of course, what was compromised is the ability to get food, water, electricity was off most of the time, heating was problematic. It was a challenging situation. And within that, the most striking thing happened. There was, this man by the name of Vedran Smailovic, and he became known as the cellist of Sarajevo. And he would dress up in his evening attire, so in a tuxedo, and he would come out with his cello in a variety of different places and simply play. He'd play for the people of Sarajevo, and then he would leave. And it'd be a variety of places. Sometimes he would have a performance in a bombed-out building. or often at funerals, which were actually known to attract sniper fire, or in bomb shelters, or in various places in the streets. He performed actually over 250 times during the siege of Sarajevo. I think it takes a deep faith and confidence to do something like that, especially in the midst of such trying circumstances. A confidence to play like that, a confidence to offer beauty in a situation like that. And I want to point out some things about the confidence and faith that he must have to do something like that in a situation of Sarajevo in the early 90s. And what I want to point out is that he probably wasn't playing because he thought it was going to stop the siege the next day. He didn't play because he was going to think that it was going to bring food to everyone the next day, or water, or heating. I'm sure he wasn't believing that the sniper fire was going to stop just because he was playing. So I want to point out that this kind of faith and confidence, it doesn't fit into this linear idea of how things unfold. That if I do this, then this will happen. And yet we know that this cellist, he moved many people. He inspired countless people. And probably was an important figure for many of the residents of Sarajevo during that time. But it didn't fit into this simple A happens and then B happens. To offer something, to commit to something, yet not knowing the direct consequence of it. So I want to point a few things out about this, which I think is important for our practice. Sometimes, and you might notice this, that sometimes when we're faced with difficulty, when we're faced with the wars in our minds or in our lives, we have the hope that if we sit and meditate and be kind, then it will just all go away, hopefully, tomorrow. You ever have that thought? That's one kind of faith. And I feel like there's a deeper kind of faith that we're asked to engage in, something like what Vedran Smailovic was doing. That we engage in the act of being present, of being kind, but not so obsessive about what's going to result from it. And yes, I want to point out, especially in the beginning of one's spiritual path, I think it's really important to test it. The Buddha was really clear about this. We want to really notice if the way that we're engaging in our spiritual path, is it leading to the end of stress, to the lessening of stress and suffering in our life, or not? This is a really important question to come back to again and again. Is the way that we're engaging in meditation, in ethical conduct, in generosity and kindness, and in compassion, is it bringing about something different? So yes, there's a place to become curious about that, especially in the beginning. And this is one of the important qualities of faith in Buddhism, is that it's not blind faith. It's something that we rely upon or we build through investigation. We come to see if what the Buddha is saying was actually true or not. Is being present, does that lead to more freedom or less freedom? And he's really clear not to believe that, but to investigate it. Is that what you're noticing in your spiritual on your spiritual path, or no? So especially in the beginning, we need to have this quality of investigation coupled together with our faith so that it's not some kind of blind faith. This is not some path where we hear the words of the Buddha and we think, I believe, and I'm going to simply follow regardless of how it unfolds. So yes, there is a place for that. And I want to point out at the same time, and this is what can be so tricky to understand, is that there can be an obsessiveness of, is this working? A kind of tightness in the mind where we're too obsessed with getting results. And there can be this quality of, I'm always wanting to get something out of my practice. And then that's going to stifle it. That's a much different feeling than this image I just gave to you of the Cellist of Sarajevo. One of the things that I hold in my mind, which I find is so important for this, is that I know that this practice works, that it unfolds in a way that brings freedom into my life. In terms of how it's going to unfold day to day, I have no idea. And can I hold that not knowing? Not knowing how the practice unfolds. So that there's this broader sense of engagement in the path. There's a Zen monk by the name of Fayan, and Fayan was going on pilgrimage, and he came across this hermit. A Zen master who was a hermit. And the Zen master asked Fayan, where are you going? And Fayan says, which I just love this answer, wherever my feet take me. Which is so wonderful. We tread the spiritual path in a way that we go wherever our feet takes us. In particular, wherever our feet, in terms of the Dharma, wherever the Dharma takes us, that's where we go. I don't know what the end point is going to look like. And then the Zen master asked him, where do you expect to get to? And Fayan says, I don't know. And then the Zen master says, ah, yes, not knowing is most intimate. There's an intimacy that can arise with our spiritual practice, with our experience, when there's this quality of not knowing how this path is going to unfold. Can you bring that quality to your practice, but also to that this quality of faith and confidence, to having faith and confidence without this desperation of needing an immediate result? I'd like to share with you another illustration of this faith and confidence. The story of the Buddha. This took place actually quite close to, it was just before the time he died. And what was going on during the Buddha's time, towards the end of his time, is there was a prince, Prince Vidaduba, he was the son of King Pasenadi, who was a king that supported the Buddha. And unfortunately, this prince had a vendetta against the Buddha's clan, namely the Sakya clan. He was extremely upset about what they had done. To put it simply, I'll give a little bit background information, is that King Pasenadi had a lot of respect for the Sakya clan, and so he wanted to marry somebody from their clan. The Sakyans, and you get to hear in this just the overemphasis on class, which is really quite tragic. And so he wanted to marry somebody from the Sakyan clan, so he was asking the Sakyan clan if he could take one of their women in marriage. And the Sakyan clan wanted to be nice, but they also felt like that they were much more superior than King Pasenadi, that they were a higher caste than him. So they weren't really excited about one of them marrying him. So the way they got around it is they decided to send one of their slave women to marry King Pasenadi, which he did not know about. They married, they had a son. The son became very interested in the family he came from. So he said, Mom, I'd like to see the fam. What about it? Of course, the mother wasn't so excited about that. Except the child kept on saying, please, please, please. And then finally, he was able to go back to the Sakya clan and see them, and they had set up a place for him to sit so that he would feel like he was a prince. So he was there, he was respectfully treated, and then after he left, somebody in his entourage had left a sword, so this person went back and they saw a woman washing off the seat that he had sat on, cursing, saying, I can't believe this slave boy was sitting in this place. And then it came out that he was not of this caste. And so he became extremely angry about it. I just a side note, I really want to point out about this, in the midst of this, what a radical thing that the Buddha was doing. He kept on trying to undermine the idea of class and caste by the way he spoke. Just for example, in terms of nobility. That nobility, he was saying, was based on one's spiritual life, not on what family one was born in. Do you hear how radical that was for that time, especially when you think of the emotion around this? Really a beautiful thing to be offering during those times. And so he was upset, and he planned with his army to invade the Sakya, basically their land there. And the Buddha found out about this, so he decided to sit under a banyan tree right on the edge of where his kinsmen, his clan was had their land. And it was interesting because it was during the hot season and the banyan tree had no leaves on it, yet the Buddha was sitting underneath this tree. And Prince Vidodaba came with his army and stopped where the Buddha was sitting. And of course, quite embarrassed about what he was doing. So he asked the Buddha, how is it that you come to sit here? And why under a tree with no leaves and no shade? And the Buddha said, there is nothing that cools me more than to be in the land of my family, in the land of my tribe. And hearing those words, the prince retreated. Of course, the Buddha giving him a different perspective on what he was doing. But then, after some time, the prince came back, saw the Buddha, retreated. A third time, came, saw the Buddha sitting there, and retreated. Yet on the fourth time, he drove right on past the Buddha and went in. And it said that actually, basically, the entire clan was demolished other than a few remaining survivors. So men, women, and children. It takes a great faith, a great confidence to sit under a tree like that, probably knowing that eventually this is going to happen. What do we make of that story? What do you make of that story? Does it mean that this path doesn't work? That the Buddha was unsuccessful in what he was doing? Is that what it means? Or does it show us that bad things can happen and yet this practice still unfolds in ways we might not see? We don't know how the prince and the army was affected. Especially, I like this story because when you think of the Buddha's life, of how many thousands of years it has influenced other people's lives. So difficult to know exactly how our actions, how we engage in the spiritual path, is going to affect the world that we live in. But can you have faith, can you have confidence that what you do, if it's every morning or every other morning, when you're sitting or when you're practicing generosity or compassion, has an impact? That you might not be able to follow or trace that line. That's the kind of confidence that we need to deeply engage in this. The quality of simply being present, the quality of being kind to ourselves or others, knowing or having the confidence that will radiate out. And making the choices to allow those things to infuse our lives. And so important, because you might know that doubt is the opposite. Doubt is saying, this isn't working. I know it's not working. I can see it's not working. Today I'm in pain. Yesterday I was in pain. And last week I was in pain. It's not working. I want to get rid of the pain. There's a narrow view there that doesn't allow the path to unfold. So you might hear from this that faith is actually different than hope. I think there is a place for hope in our lives. I'm not saying that, but I want to make this distinction because I think it can be helpful in terms of deeply engaging on a spiritual path. Hope, have you noticed that hope has an expectation within it? I'm hoping for something specific to happen. And what comes with that is sometimes an anxiety. I'm hoping that it's all going to work out in the way I want it to work out. And you might notice that many times we come to our spiritual path, we come to our spiritual practice with some kind of hope. Hope that it's going to work out in a very specific way. And for those of you who practice, you've probably noticed that it doesn't lead in that direction. You can start to gain a wisdom of engaging and being present and allowing things to unfold and knowing that they'll unfold in a more skillful way when we engage in this practice. Maybe not the way I want it to, but I can relate to the unfolding of experience in a more skillful way, so I'm not suffering as much, and so that others are not suffering as much. And it's such a tempting thing to want. Basically, it's wanting something solid and secure from this practice. And I want to point out, really, much of this path in this practice isn't going towards something solid and secure. What are we doing? We're beginning to notice. You're beginning to notice how the world that we live in is not solid. It's not secure. And to begin to find a quality of freedom within such a world. So what would it begin to be like to cultivate a faith that allows you that actually gives you the confidence to move in such a fluid world, in a world that's filled with uncertainty, but in a way that you're still moving through it in an authentic way, in a real way, in a way that you're actually here for it. So how do you cultivate such faith, such confidence, in particular the way I've been talking about it, the confidence to commit to a spiritual path? I want to come back to this word saddha, the Pali being the early scriptural language of Buddhism, to go a little bit more in depth of that, to give us a broader sense of that. Another way that this Pali term is translated is that it means to put one's heart into. And when I hear that, I realize really what faith is that it's actually this process of falling in love. It's falling in love with a spiritual path. It's seeing if I can have an emotional quality, an emotional connection with the path that I'm on. And I know some of you know this feeling of what it is to fall in love with a path or a practice. It becomes intertwined with the way that you live. Namely, falling in love with what is ultimately true within our experience. But I also want to point out about something about falling in love, which you might remember when you have fallen in love, is that often falling in love carries with it certain delusions. You ever notice that? Oh my God, this is the person. They're so great. I used to feel so incomplete and so unhappy, and they're going to make me happy. This is the perfect relationship. Ever have those feelings at all? Boy, that's a bad one, isn't it? Can they really break us? So that's what can happen within falling in love, is these delusions. And I want to point out that really the problem isn't falling in love. The problem is delusions. And actually the same thing happens on our spiritual path. We can fall in love with a spiritual path, and yet we carry these delusions with us. Wow, maybe if I practice, maybe I will start to feel like a whole person. I won't feel incomplete anymore. This will take care of all of my problems. Wouldn't that be great? Or maybe sometimes we come to a spiritual path and we think, oh, if I really engage in meditation or on a spiritual path, I won't have to feel as much. I'm sick of feeling all this pain and this difficulty in my life. Maybe I'll take up meditation. Ever have a thought like that? And have you noticed that the results are a little bit different? So So yeah, we need to work through our delusions so that we can have this truly falling in love with the path. Ilaluddin Rumi, I think, puts it really well. He says, the minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was. Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along. So what we fall in love with is much closer than we when we notice at first. This is it, this confidence to commit. And in particular, I'm inviting you to see what allows you to fall in love with the spiritual path. What will allow you to have an emotional connection with your path? What inspires you to have that connection? It could be because of the way your life has changed as a result of committing to something. It could be because of the stories that you've heard. It could be because of the community that you find yourself in. What allows you to deepen that? We have to ask the question as well, which is so important, which is faith in what? What do we have faith in? What do you have confidence in or faith in on a spiritual path? And as I pointed out, when we begin to see we don't live in a solid world, it can be tricky to get a sense of what we're really trying to have faith and confidence in. Because sometimes we can pick the wrong things to have faith and confidence in. For example, a Tibetan teacher that I practice with, he often says, Sokhni Rinpoche, he'll say, don't build your confidence on happiness. Which I think is quite striking. Happiness can be so ephemeral. If my confidence is on my happiness, then tomorrow might not be such a great day if I'm not so happy. But sometimes that's where we're building our confidence upon, is happiness. It's important to see what you're placing your confidence in. So confidence in what? Faith in what? I want to throw some things out there, and I want to be really clear. I hope I don't answer this for you, because I can't. This is something that you really need to answer for yourself. What is it on your spiritual path that you can have faith and confidence in, that you have an emotional connection to, for you in particular? One thing that we can have faith in is this process, this unfolding process that the Buddha invited us to engage in. Namely, the things that I'm sure you've been hearing about on Thursday nights and Sunday nights, and ethical conduct, and the activity of cultivating generosity, or cultivating kindness and compassion. To actually have faith and confidence in engaging in those things. Or, of course, the meditation that we're always coming back to. What's it like to have faith and confidence that what is needed is to actually come back to right now, again and again and again? And also what that's predicated on is that having faith and confidence that what's needed is for me to be with what's arising right now. Because you might notice, again, that a lot of times we don't have much confidence in that. I would rather be with anything than what's going on, with anything else rather than what's going on right now. Have you ever noticed that state of mind come up? I don't want to be with this. And actually, I'm going to try to find any way that I can to distract myself from being with what's going on right now. What would it be like to have the strong confidence to be with what's arising right now? Another way of putting that is of having faith and confidence in wakefulness and being aware. For many people, this is what it is to take refuge in the Buddha, to take refuge in being awake and being aware. I think think one of the things that comes through faith for me, which is so important, and this is why I find it so important to recommit to it again and again, is that it can begin to help me get a feeling that I am not doing the practice, that the practice is somehow moving through me. And I find this so important, because a lot of times when I am at the center of the way I conceive this world, a lot of problems happen. It has not been a successful strategy. But when I have faith and confidence, it's like I have an ability to surrender, to give myself over to this path, this practice. And what that requires of me is this faith, this confidence, this trusting of this path. So faith, the confidence to commit, and we cultivate it through falling in love, having this quality of an emotional relationship to our path. And also the importance of getting clear about what are you having faith and confidence in. Maybe it's being present or being awake or following the specific spiritual path that the Buddha outlined. And can we engage in it so that we don't desperately need to know what's the next thing that's going to happen? And so may our faith and confidence on a spiritual path lead to the liberation of all beings. Thank you.